The names of the interviewers, Tommy. The names of the interviewees, Alfred. The place of the interview, Frank Warwick House.
Weimark.
That's it. I never get it. SE16. The name of the project, Grandchildren of the Blitz. The name and place of the interviewee's birth, Alfred. Can you give me your place?
Alfred William Wright. Is that your
name? Alfred William Wright. Where was your place of birth, sir?
My place of birth, Bermondsey.
Bermondsey. Thank you, that's perfect. Thank you. A first question.
Yes.
I'd like to start off by asking you is, could you tell me your experiences in the various shelters?
I never had a lot of experience in shelters because I was called up early during the war. And I was stationed, and we were stationed at a place called Folkestone.
Yeah.
And I was in a unit that was in the supply line. I wasn't actually in the fighting part. Okay. I was in the supply line. The kind of work that we had to do, we had to discharge ships or ammunition, etc. That's what we were there for. So we formed up in our different divisions at Folkestone. And from there on, we were sent to different places to do the job that we was we were taught when we was in the civil life, because it was exactly the same work that we did civil life we had to do in the army.
Yeah.
So that's
what were your hours? Were they like 12-hour shifts?
Yeah, when we was in Tripoli, a place called Tripoli, we was doing 12-hour shifts. Yeah.
Did you have a good break in between?
Well, you got a couple of hours because you usually get home, get back at 7 o'clock in the morning if you were on night shifts, and probably you 7 o'clock. So down you would go, head down, like, you know, sleep and probably sleep
working
until
working.
Probably sleep until 12, 1 o'clock, whatever. Then the meals would be ready for us, and then we get another meal, and then we was more or less free within those couple of hours to move around, not too far, like, you know, but we'd like to move, and then we'd have to start to get there at 6 o'clock to the dock, to where we were working. We'd have to start away at 5 o'clock.
And would you go for a drink afterwards with the lads after you'd finished?
No, we never.
A week on a Friday, maybe?
No, very rarely we drank because we never had any money. It's true. Yeah. We never had a lot of money. We was only getting a few shillings. I think my wages was about, at the most, £7 or £8 at the start. But of course, my own fault was that I split my wages up and sent. It was £14 a week, and I sent £7 to my mum. Regularly, they sent it. And I had the other £7. So that's what I had to keep me, was £7 all through the week.
What would you like to do with your £7? What would you do in your spare time?
Well, I didn't smoke.
No.
And I didn't drink, you see. So the money that I had, £7, I was a bit of a film goer. So if I had the, as soon as I got time off during the daytime, while I was in the barracks, that was before we got to Tripoli, but I'm talking about now when we were first called up. Then I would go and see a film. And fortunately, I powered out with another chap who was of the same mind as me. He didn't, he wanted to go to see films during the time. Of course, it was cheap enough for us to go to films, Johnny. I think it probably cost you about a shilling anyway, which is chicken feed today, isn't it? So that was the beginning of my start at the. Of course, we had to go through all the drill raids, the drill patrols, everything, like, you know. So that we was about 6 months training, and then that's when they started moving us around. We was all put in different divisions. Our company was A, B, C and D, and whatever division you went with, so you were sent to wherever you had to go. Like,
where was your training taking place?
Longmoor.
Longmoor.
Yes. Longmoor, that's in Sussex, isn't it? Yeah, Sussex.
Can you remember what it looked like the environment? Was it horrible?
No, it wasn't too bad, really, you know. Because we were of the families where we had to rough it during our lives. So when we went to the barracks, it was something different, obviously.
Yeah.
But we was able to take it in right away. We understood what we was there for, and we accepted what we had to do. Like, you know, there's plenty of people telling us what to do and what not to do when we had to do the drawing there. But once we had to go and do the work that we was there for, nobody had to tell us because we knew exactly what we had to do, you see.
Did you make any best friends while you was in training?
Oh, like, yeah.
Do you still keep in contact with any today?
No.
Well, best friends.
Yeah, really close friends. Did you make any during
in the army?
Yeah, while you was training.
Yeah. Picked up with, because I was a stevedore, and all the stevedores was put in these divisions, and dockers. We was mixed up stevedores and dockers because we all worked in the Surrey Commercial Dock. You know where Surrey Quays is?
Yeah.
That used to be full up with ships. And we used to discharge those ships or load the ships. So when we was, as I said, as we was called, we knew what we had to do, and we was able to do it whenever we was told to do it. Like, you know.
How was the morale in the community kept at a high level? How did people
keep
going? Was it just
a sense of humour? We all had a sense of humour, like, you know, and we was able to joke with each other. Or argue, we used to a lot of arguing with each other, like, you know. And we never became enemies or fell out with each other. It was something that, when you join, you know you're there for a purpose, so you join together, really. Try to keep that, I know you're individuals, you try to keep as a one big part.
Like a band of brothers.
Yeah, that's right, yes. So that's why we all come from different parts of the country. They come from Wales within our union. They had done exactly the same kind of work that we did. So we had a mixture of Brummies, Scotchmen. They was all there, like, you know. And we all used to take the mickey out of each other. So we always had
banter.
There was always laughter with us, like, you know. And we got on very well, really.
Mm.
And then after a while, we had to go on parade, and then we had to get aboard the lorries that took us away. And we finished up in Liverpool. And then from Liverpool, we went to. I forget the name of the place up in Scotland now. And we went aboard a boat, all the way, and we went to Norway because he was advancing through Europe. And at the moment, Norway wasn't invaded at that particular time, like, you know. But of course, I'm talking about the Germans, they had such a strong force. Army, they had everything that we never had.
Yeah.
So they were just sweeping across, and we went to Norway, and we was only there for about 3-4 weeks, and then the warship came in, picked us all up and took us back home again. Because the Germans, they were just sweeping right across.
How long was you in Norway, sorry?
And we was in Norway for about 2 months.
2 months?
Yeah. We was there for about 2 months.
What did you think of Norway? Of what you saw of it? Was it not?
We never went. We was only in this village, tiny fishing village that we went to, because there was this harbour, and it was big enough. The harbour was big enough to bring in ships that needed to be discharged. Like, and that's what our job was, discharge the ships. So. But we was only there for about 2 months the most. Of course, the Germans were sweeping right across. And unfortunately, a lot of our soldiers were there. They, in their, not their, what's that, they had to move away. They was leaving a lot of their equipment behind. So they used to come to us and take all our equipment that we had. We had to give it away to them. So they had something to fight with, you know what I mean? Because we weren't fighting soldiers. We was working soldiers. And so we had to give all our equipment to them. Of course, when we got back to England, we had no equipment at all. So we all had to be, we had to be renewed with all our equipment. All our rifles and all they took, we lost all of, because we all had a rifle apiece, just in case of an emergency. But we never really had any emergencies. The only trouble we had with them up there. But apart from that, we never had to fight any Germans.
No.
We was in the supply line.
You had your own battle to fight, really.
Yeah, well, what happened, you see, when where the army took a port, then they had to have dockers or stevedores to go up behind them, so that when the ships come in, we used to discharge the ships, ammunition, food, whatever it was, to keep them supplied so they can keep on moving up. Like, yeah. Well, I'm organised. And of course, we had Montgomery took over. The greatest person that ever was, Lord Montgomery. I think he never got the praise that he because if they brought him back when we'd won the war in Africa, West Africa, which took about 3 months, I think. Once he took hold of the army and restructured us all. All exercises of the morning, we had to get up in the morning. Oh, bloody nuisance that was. Get up and do all our exercises because he wanted fit men all the time. And he, I'm talking about North Africa now, we were sent to North Africa.
Yeah.
And so as the army moved up, taking places, the ground from the Germans, so they don't have supplies going up, not only us, other people, you know. And that wasn't a very good job because now and again you'd get machine guns along, like, you know.
Yeah.
So it was all in danger. Don't we was up in the head, the top, and the front, at the front. We had to mess around with him up there. And we had nothing to protect us. Zoom along, like, you know. All we had was our rifles. But no, we was fortunate. We got away with it, really, like, you know. There's hardly anybody in our unit got injured. The only time they got injured is if they had an accident down the ship's hold. But apart from that, no, we
all good.
Yeah, and then we got up as far as, Benghazi.
Tasmania, yeah.
But no, Benghazi. And the Germans started to reform and started pushing us all the way back again. And we come all the way back into Egypt. But across, I forget the names of the places, but across between North Africa and Egypt, there's an immense swamp goes right across. And there's only a certain amount of ground between, shall we say, Ismailia, or whatever the name of the place was, I forget now. And he was able to defend that because they couldn't come across that, because if their tanks come across, they'd just go in, disappear. So they were stopped there, not by us, but by the swamp that ran right across Africa. And so he was able to keep them at bay, as it were, like, you know. And then, of course, we had to have all our reinforcements come up. And he had to rejig the soldiers and the army and everything. And once he made a move, there was no stopping us. We took the advantage, or he took the advantage, and we swept all the Germans way through. And we went as far as Tripoli. We got as far as Tripoli. And he carried on, but he wanted to get into North Africa. And they stopped him from going in there. And he was rather, we heard afterwards, he was rather annoyed because he was pushing them all back. And not only was he doing a good job, he wanted the glory and all of what he'd done, like, you know, and we should give him. And what happened was they stopped him about 3 or 4 miles from Tripoli, and the Americans invaded North Africa. And of course, they got part of the glory. They took a part of the glory away from him, like, you know. And I'm telling Mr. Montgomery was rather disappointed over there.
Did you meet him?
No, I never, no. We'd seen him from time to time, but no. We never said anything of the brass. Because we was that low down, so they were up there, like, you know what I mean? And no, we never saw none of the brass.
Why did you think he didn't get that recognition that he so deserves? Why do you think he didn't get that accolade or that he should have got?
Well, Mr. Churchill, I suppose, was to blame for that. I mean, the orders must have come from indirectly, but the orders must have come from Mr. Churchill for him to stop there. And now that you had the head of the American, what's his name now? They come there, and they wanted, because they was sending lots of men and ammunition, etc., to this country. Without the Americans, we'd have been swept away. And so I think what it was after, they had to give the Americans, of course, a bit of glory, because they had nothing. They'd been in England and been training. So what they did, they sent the Americans into the north part of Africa, and they went in and they finished up sweeping them all away. Sweeping them all away. But it was Montgomery did it. Montgomery. He was the guy. Best general we've ever had. And of course, when they was in France, they called him back, put him in charge of a division in what's the name, and he got as far as Berlin, and he wanted to go further on. He wanted to go on.
But they stopped him. The
Russians was coming this way.
Come back, they've recouped.
And he had orders to stop. And he was very annoyed. You get the word, comes back to us. And he was very annoyed over that, because he'd got the Germans on the run and he wanted to keep them running. But they wanted to give the Russians a bit more glory, as we give to the Americans, like, you know. Gave them that little bit of glory. It's surprising, you know.
Power of glory.
Although their forces were 10 times stronger than us, the Americans and the Russians, we did most of the fighting at one time, not in Russia, but here this side, we did most of the fighting, or our men did. They did most of the fighting. And they took that little bit of glory away from them, which they was entitled to, you know. Especially when you're going up and down, and we up and down 2 or 3 times. Not only that, you got him upstairs coming over, dropping his bombs. But they are. We accepted it, and we got over it.
Carried on.
Yeah, and we carried on till we got to Tripoli, and the war. Once we got to Tripoli, the war was ended. And
How did you celebrate that when you found out that the war was officially over?
So
you didn't have a
party. We knew we was winning. We knew that he was going to be, that the war was over. Weeks before it, because we knew that it was over, because we were so powerful at that particular time, that they was just overrun. Of course, we had to fight the at the beginning we was fighting the Italians. And they was like fighting children. They honestly, the Italians was their army poor. Was a bit very poor, yeah.
If I might go down a different path, I'll ask you quite a different question.
Yeah.
Before the war, did you have any aspirations that you wanted to be when you was older? Any dreams?
No. Oh, no. Because when I was young, I was 14, I went to... left school at 14 on the Friday, and on the Monday, I was sent out to get a job. Started work at 14, and I went to the Labour Exchange and got a job at the place, and I was getting 7 shillings a week then, which was quite a tidy bit of money for a boy at 14, I tell you, because Dad only used to give us about 6 pence a week each, because I had 3 sisters, and he'd give us 3 pence a week, 6 pence a week. So when you've got 7 shillings in your hand, you think to yourself, oh, well, yeah, you know, yeah, I'm going to buy this and buy that. Until Mum said, how much did you get, boy? So I said, 7 shillings, Mum. So she says, well, I'll take 4 of that, she said, and you can keep 3. Well, that was the 4 to keep me, like, you know. But 3 shillings was still enough money. Because if you wanted to go to the pictures, it'd be about 3 pennies. So, you know.
Can you remember the films that you saw and the actors that you admired at that period of time at all?
Oh, Victor McLaglen was one of them.
Mm.
Yeah. No, a lot of them run away from me now. I know Victor McLaglen was one of them. He was a top star at the time. But after that, I used to go to work and I used to keep the job for about 2 or 3 weeks and then I'd leave it. And then I went on another job. And that's how I worked right up until I was about... how old would I be? About 18. Because at 18, I was free to go where I like, what job, as long as I put my wages indoors and I behaved myself, which I did, then I was free to go where I like. Free to come in any time of the night time, which I never did, but I've got a...
Freedom was there for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, freedom, yeah. We all had freedom at that time, we was never. And...
How would you say them times have changed to the present day? Would you say massively?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Isn't it? It was a different life there. We were free. We were free to walk about at the night time. We were free. The children were free to play in the streets until it got dark. Every day we was out in the street playing. Different game, ball games, frog games. Jumping over each other's back and standing still, and if you moved, you was out, like, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know if you played those games, did you?
Yeah, I have.
Have you?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, we still play those.
Do you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
With my scouting lot, we still do.
Yeah, they're good games, Al.
Never dialed.
The poor fellow who's bending down, you pound on
his back.
Especially
when he's like a little fellow like that, yeah. And a big guy comes to jump over him.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
But we was free to do all those sort of things, yeah. And right until the army, until the war started, we were still free to do, because I was got called up. Once I went to work at 14, those sort of games were finished, because I'd become a different person. I was a working boy. And I'd come home get home about 5:30.
At the age of 14?
Yeah. Get home about 5:30. Have my tea. Mum had the tea ready for me. Did you have a good day, son? Yeah, oh, yes, Mum. Thank you very much. Because Mum was the governor in my house. My dad was the master, really, but my mum, she did everything for us. lovely mum behind.
Yeah.
And she was outside, I said, yeah, what are you going to do tonight, boy? I said, I think I'll go out the pictures, mum. All right, behave yourself. And away I go, like, you know. And that's how free we were. We wasn't afraid of anybody out in the street touching us or grabbing us or trying to kidnap us. I've walked through those streets from Elephant and Castle, 12 o'clock at night, 11 o'clock at night.
I can not do a that. Bit of fear. I can do that these days.
But not a bit of fear.
No.
You didn't have to look around you, you know, just walking. Oh, yeah. Because the freedom we had then, the children haven't got today. Because their mothers and fathers are fearful of what might happen to them if they was out in the street.
Why do you think that is, though? Why? Because there's a sudden change from this brilliant freedom to having this...
Well, the war started all that, you see. All that freedom we had. And when the war started, the freedom was no longer there.
So after the war, that's when people started to be a little bit cautious?
Yeah, oh yeah, after the war. Well, they've been there for... Some of them had 4 years of it, of the bombing, which is what my wife had. They had 4 years of the bombing constantly, not practically every night. And they've switched from us. This is what I've heard. I wasn't there. I was only there for a couple of days and I was back into the unit.
Yeah.
But this is the stories that we were told and we believed them. And then they went from bombing us for a while and they went up to Coventry. And they blew Coventry to bits. Oh, and that was a terrible thing, that was.
Mm.
And then, I forget the names of it in charge, who was in charge. They sent, when we had the better of the Germans, when we got the better of them, they went to one of the villages, or smaller towns, and we bombed them cleared. We smashed everything up. And that was in reprisal to what they'd done to Coventry City. Because Coventry City was
terrible. It
was nearly flattened, yeah. God knows how many people were killed. Nobody knows. Yeah, but that's...
But would you say right that the events in Coventry spurred the people in London and the passion to go out there and really...
It was something that you didn't expect anybody to do. It gave you an insight of what these people were like, you know. Had no feelings for anybody, only for themselves, like, you know. Mm. Terrible. The Germans were, and yet when they were captured, because when we used to go up to Tobruk, the Germans that was captured in the desert, they would be brought into Tobruk to be put on a train or a ship to take to the prison camps. They was all sitting there, all meek and mild. Matter of fact, we used to consider. Yeah, well, because, you know, they're sitting there like that. Poor sods, you know, we used to say, poor sods sitting there. All alone, nobody speaks to them. Make them a fag, like, you know. Want a fag? Yes, please. A fag.
Wow.
So there was... I think the soldier himself, it was the officers that would
do the real damage.
Brought all that mayhem to us, yeah. But anyway, we got the better of them in West Africa. That was a nasty spell up there, but they got rid of them. And
I was going to say, if you could describe the Blitz for a future generation in one word. What would that be and why?
Well, to be quite honest with you, I wasn't in the Blitz.
I mean, your war experience in general, in one word, sorry. Mother,
we had a wonderful time.
Wonderful time.
True. We enjoyed ourselves. because we wasn't in the middle of the fighting. We was there to discharge ships. And of course we had him to contend with up there down again. There was one incident that happened to us in that we was in Tripoli, and the ship come in full of ammunition. So we had to start discharging the ammunition. And then we had the, what do they call them, hen, come over and one at that guy.
Doodle bugs.
No, the airplanes.
B2. Lancaster.
Spitfire.
Yeah, not been, anyway, they used to have to, like our Spitfires, they used to send airplanes over. And while we was in Tripoli, and we was discharging this boat, they two or three of these planes come over and were dropping their bombs. And each time they missed us. So we was lucky, really, because if we'd have hit that ship that we was in, it'd have gone sky high, like, because it was all full of ammunition. Yeah, so... But I think that is... The only real danger that I was in.
Oh, hello, Joe.
Apart from that, well, I had a pretty easy life, I guess. Yeah.
Thank you so much for this morning. Thank you so much for this morning. I think we've got everything, I think, at the moment, would you say?
It's okay, Alfie. Can I ask a few questions?
Oh, of course, yes.
Can I ask, when you were fighting, how much did you know, not fighting, when you were sort of posted overseas? I might just pause it, actually.
Yes.
Alfie, if I can ask, when you were posted in Norway and in North Africa and all those different places, how did you find out about what was happening at home? How was it communicated to you?
They were communicating, our friends or they used to write home and they used to get letters back. May take a week or a fortnight or a month from the get rid of but they. And then they'll say, oh, so-and-so, they'll tell us what was in the letters.
Okay.
Not the what was happening there, like, you know.
Sure.
Not how they felt with each other, but what's happening. And that's how we got a lot of the news from.
Yeah.
Was from the letters from home.
Did you have any correspondence during that time? Did you?
No, I never had a lot, because I never had a lot to say to Mum. You know, I was writing to Mum, all right. Doing fine.
Mm.
Hope to see you later. You know, that's all business.
Did she tell you about what was happening?
We weren't allowed to say anything about the war. Because
censored.
And anything that we said in it, they tore them up or destroyed them.
They did us
while we was in Norway. And we wanted to tell them where we were. When we wrote, and we told them there was a big church there, and it's similar, we said, and it said the church here is similar to that big church down at Proverite. And that was a Norwegian church. You see?
they got
to one up.
Wow.
You had to be careful what you wrote.
So your mum couldn't tell you what was happening? No.
They could tell us what was happening, but we couldn't tell them what was happening.
Oh, so they could tell you what was happening. So did you know about what was happening during...
Well, Mum would say that we've had a bad night last night, or we've had a bad week, you know.
Mm.
But apart from that, that's all. I don't think they said much, because they didn't want to make us feel unhappy or sad or anything, you know. They had the good cheer, the good... we're all right, don't you worry about us, son, we're all right, you know.
They got bombed in the end, didn't they?
Yeah, everybody was getting their share of it here in this country.
So was your mum bombed out then?
Yeah, my mum was bombed out one time, yeah.
And what was the, I don't think, I asked Alfred, where were you living in Bermondsey? What street were you living in?
Parkham Street was only just down the road.
St James's Church.
Yeah, just there. Lived there all my life.
What was the name of the street again?
Farncombe Street.
Farncombe?
Yeah.
Okay, how do you spell that?
FARNCOMBE.
Okay, okay.
street.
The woman was bombed out, and where did she go?
She finished up in
Blackheath.
Blackheath.
Recommended to her.
Yeah. She finished out.
From Southwark County, a very clean woman, you know.
And
she was recommended to have some officers there to so give it up, private road. And she got this place at Blackheath.
Mm. Nice house, I am. Yeah.
Okay.
Temporary.
Servants, you know, like in the rooms. She didn't have servants, but they did, but there was nursery and a servant. You press the button.
Yeah, it's quite a big house she had.
And Alfie, did you worry about your family at home when you were away?
Not too much, no.
Why do you think? Why do you think that was? Why didn't you just? Did you kind of have to put it out of your mind to be able to?
Well, yeah, really.
No.
Couldn't do nothing. You see, so the least worry you put on their shoulders or my shoulders was the best thing they could do, because they didn't want us to worry about them. And that we didn't want them to worry about us, like, you know what I mean? Everything was hunky-dory, you know. So, no, we never put any sad things, worrying things to the letters, no.
Sure.
Everything's all right, Mum, we're doing fine. Mm. All that sort of business. Like,
did
you know.
Inquire over me once,
sir? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did for my...
We were parted.
Oh.
So, yeah, can I ask, when did you two meet?
I'll tell you when I met her. She was about 15 years of
17.
Age. No, she was about 15. And she was walking down, I was one side of Jamaica Road, that's Jamaica Road, just on there. And they were coming down the other side. And I spotted them, I walked by, and she was on the inside. And I spotted her, and I thought, oh, not a bad looking girl, that. And went. Now, I never. 2 years later, I'm talking about after the war now, 2 years later, I was the only one in our little crowd that I used to go with.
This was after you came back? This was after the war?
Yeah.
No, before he went to the war.
No, I met that when she was 15, but after the war I met up with her again.
Okay, yeah.
And the next time I saw her was 2 years later, when the three of us was going to Hot Picket, do you know Hot Picket?
Mm-hmm.
We was all going down there for the weekend. And we got in and they said, by the way, Alfie, we've got a couple of girls going. I said, no, we're not. I'm not taking any girls. No, I said, we ain't got room in here for girls. Yes, we had, they can sit on our laps. And who was one of the girls? It was her. I hadn't seen her for 2 years. I instantly recognised her.
My mate's sister was at the Hot Picket, and we were.
Yeah.
She said, come down with Fred, her brother-in-law. And, of course, I did.
Mm.
And I was the only girl, and he was the driver of the car. They couldn't drive, they used to drive out of the car.
Yeah. So, that's how I met her. I thought, well, she's bigger. And when I brought them all home after the weekend, I told her to stay behind in the car, and I started chatting her up.
But I didn't want to know.
No, I said about making a date go out. She didn't want to know, so I thought, oh, well, that's it, they're finished.
Very hard to get,
honey,
very good
tactic. After that, they come home from Opin, it used to be about 6 weeks. My friend's sister said, tell Annie that chap wants to meet us to do his marriage, and he was 25 years older than me. She said, no, he'd be good to you, Anne. So I met him at Revive Tunnel here.
That's right.
There used to be a bus go for, and he took me to the pictures and a box of chocolates and everything.
Oh, I was very good that way.
We went about
treating the girls up.
A few months.
Proper gentleman.
Was this during?
Yeah, it's true.
No.
After.
Oh, that was after the war. After the war.
Before the war.
Before the war.
Before the war.
Okay.
And then there was that gap, and then came after the war.
So were you writing to each other?
No.
No.
We parted.
We parted.
We weren't going together anymore.
We
bought me a watch. I still got the watch. And anyway.
I didn't see any future in it, but beside that, I said, right. Not pointless love, I said. We're
and
back up.
One day I come home from work and a woman said to me, Annie, I'll be bloke's been here in the old flats we lived in, Jamaica Road. We're four, do you know Four Squares?
No.
Yes.
They're Jamaica Road. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
No, I don't.
But they was old flats, yeah. Industrial dwellings, and I was born there. And she said, army chap's been here. So I said, army, what about? So she said, he wants to know if you were safe and well. So I said, who is it then? So she said, do you know anyone named a White? I said, no. So she said, I know a bloke Wright, chap Wright. Well, said it must have been that. Well, he sent to find out if you was all right. And it was him, sent the army up. And I wasn't with him, but he...
was still in my mind, though.
To find out...
She was still in my mind.
And do you know what? I still got an airmail, 1943, asking me to go back with him. I still got it.
Yeah, because when I was out in the Middle East...
Well, back when you was going on the boat, the bloke told you.
Oh, yeah, when I was leaving in England, me and my mate, my friend then at one time, were standing on the rails and we could see little England going, well, his wife, bye. And he wondered the Indian sailors come up to us, etc. He's saying bye-bye. Yeah, so we don't know if we're going to see it again. So he said, would you like me to take your fortune? He said, oh, please. I said, oh, please. Do you know where we're going? I said. He said, no, let me take your fortune. So we said, all right. So the amateur went first. He'd just got married.
Yeah.
He looked at him and he said, oh, yes. He said, you haven't been married very long, have you? So he said, no. He said, well, I'm trying to tell you, you're going to get divorced.
I said, thanks very much.
He said, thanks very much. Then he looks at my hand. I was under. He said, oh, he said, you've got a long life now in there. Well, I'm 93.
I was going to say, he was right.
He was right. You've got a long life now in there. He
he's
said,
married,
he said, and you're going to get, what was it?
You're not married.
Oh, yeah. He says, you're not married, are you? I says, no. He said, but you're going to get married when you're 40 years of age.
30.
Was it 30? 30 years of age. I said, totally, but I haven't even got a girl. Of course, I started chatting her up, got the envelopes going backwards and forwards, the letters. I came back, and I was a friend. Yeah. Because we met and started up again. And I got married
29
when I was
29 and three quarters.
Yeah.
Or wait.
All right, I'll do it.
Hold on.
Already told me.
They done that when we were 60 years ago. We've done the
amazing.
Table.
Amazing.
Oh.
We didn't know.
That's
they pulled photos off of my son.
Look at us. Absolutely. So Alfie, can I ask, when you came back to London, were you shocked by what happened?
Yeah, I was too, because it was devastated.
Oh,
especially where I was working, Surrey Commercial Dock. So they devastated that, burnt it to the ground, because it was all timber, Surrey Docks here. They used to bring the timber in, with this yard in there, with this stacks all sent out to whoever wanted it. Of course, when he came over, after he made that one of his objects, Surrey Commercial Dock.
Hello. And carry on.
No. Where was I?
Docks.
Docks. It was all timber.
Oh, yeah, and of course, it was all, he came in, and I think they made it their object to get rid of that, which they did. They burnt it to a cinder. Bombed it. There must have been thousands of tons of timber in there.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of timber, every name.
And it just wiped it out.
And, of course, you wouldn't know it now. It's all big houses have been built upon it. It's all filled in. You can walk round there, as all these lovely houses built on it now. And there was a Tesco's up there. Well, I don't know if you know Tesco, just up at Surrey Docks there. Excuse me. And it just opened, Tesco's. And a friend and I walked in there, and we went to the lady at the counter, and she was standing in the exact spot where we used to be. And I said to her, "You're in the way there." I said, "There's the crane standing up there. You get out of the way." She said, What? So that's where Tesco's is now, in Surrey Docks.
So you remember where you worked as a docker?
I can even pinpoint now. Where all those houses are there, I can even pinpoint now where
we
were.
We'd love to go down with you and have a look at it with you.
Oh, we know.
It'd be amazing.
Yeah. Of course, and all those streets down there have been named after the ducks.
Mm.
You go down there and all those street names, Abertains. Abertains to the docks.
Fishermen's Drive and all that.
The only thing that annoyed us, stevedores or dockers, is that when they changed the name of Surrey Quays.
Surrey Docks to Surrey Quays.
It was Surrey Docks, and we was annoyed to think that they changed it, because it's much better wording, isn't it? Surrey Quays. Surrey Docks.
Yeah.
But that was the only thing there, Surrey Docks, with Abertain, with all those houses there, that's where the docks was all the way around. So we felt we was not treated kindly with that, by calling it Surrey Quays. I know the Quays, Abertain, with the water and that was there.
Yeah, but it's wiping out the history of it.
Docks,
bit, it
was wiped out.
Yeah, right.
History, yeah. Yeah, we was rather annoyed with that.
It's where it's all docks, all posh down there now, yeah.
Yes,
there used to be all the council flats down there. There was no transport years ago when we was kids. And then when you grew up, they say, "Well, you can have the flat downtown." They called it downtown. And I don't want to go there because you couldn't get back. You had to walk from downtown all round out the docks.
Never had a bus going round over a weekend. Never a weekend, anyway. Yeah, still. It was all right. We were all right. But the strange part is we accepted it. There was change coming all the time, and we accepted it. As it came along, we accepted it, like, you know. Some of it was for the worst, something was for the best.
It's Brunel Road. And it was till we come here, we knew there was Abertain Road, and then Adams Gardens and St Mary's Estate. All the years, I was born in Jamaica Road, just down the road. Never knew till we come here. This block of flats opposite here is called Brunel Estate. Never knew that.
She never knew. Years. Because we're Bermondsey born, and now we're Bermondsey born and Bermondsey girl, like, you know.
Where we are around this, I couldn't cross that road when I can't see.
Because there's a song there. We are some of the Bermondsey boys. We are some of the boys. We know our manners and all our tanners. We are respected wherever we go. Doors and windows open wide. If you see a cop come, hit him on the nose and run. We are the Bermondsey boys. You all recorded that.
I did.
Oh, yeah. Did you?
We got that. We got it.
can I ask, do you ever go back to your old street? Do you ever go back to Foncombe Street?
It isn't there, really. It isn't there. The Foncombe Street School is still there.
Oh, Riverside, it's called.
That was called Foncombe Street School. Yeah. Matter of fact, my sister, my eldest sister, not the eldest one, but one older than me, she was the only one that won a scholarship in Farnham Street. And she went to, where was it she went to? College.
Laundry.
Yeah, well, anyway.
Not university then, and all she could get was
learn how to
do laundry.
Yeah, she won it.
Big scholarship, had her name The only one had a name on a shield.
Yeah, but she was the only one that won a scholarship in all the hospitals.
She had four children. Yeah. Two ended up twins.
Oh, they are, yeah.
The other one's a qualified charge account, all retired. Mm. The other one was a welfare officer. So that was all clever.
Very clever. My sister was very clever. Not me. I wasn't clever. But I knew my way about. I knew my way. Well, I finished up in charge of...
mail rooms.
What was it?
Secretary of the Mill Pond Tenants Association.
Oh, yeah.
But now
I've done about...
I've
did about 40 years of... what's the name?
Done a lot of voluntary work.
I was 12 years up in the guy's hospital. I went up there, voluntary work. And they used to leave me, some of the nurses, they used to leave me in charge of the ward. Elfie, they'd say to me, I won't be 5 minutes. Will you be all right? So I said, yeah, I'll be all right. So I'm in charge of all the old people down there. Yeah.
Yeah.
And guys, once they got to know me, and, I knew how to handle them, like, you know. So that's what he used to do.
Was he care for the elderly? He was on for 20 years.
Yeah.
And they still do it. They have dinner up there on Christmas Day. Mm. The ice party in London. And the helicopter came. What was his name?
Oh, I forget his name now.
He's on the telly. And he came right to the window. And it was called the highest part, 29 Story Hour, and that still goes on at Christmas Day.
Yeah, talk all the old people.
To go up. She says, Elfie, come up and sit down, but he won't sit down and have a meal. All right, Elfie, but he can't there with the complaints he's got, so he can't do it.
Just to go back a little bit, Elfie, do you, you know, after the Blitz had finished, after the war had finished, what was it like living in London when it was... still, you know, when there's so much damage being done to the buildings, and what was it like kind of living in that
rubble? We accepted it in our stride. We never had any anger with anybody, what we saw when we come back. And matter of fact, they did the kids a favour, because some of these buildings, they turned into ponds. And the kids were able to play out there. Where you been, boy? Oh, been...
On the bomb site.
So he'd give our children, somewhere where to play. You know, which was a good thing. We knew where they were. We knew what they were doing. So we had no worry about. Right? So we never thought about, what had been done. We was only looking forward to what could be done. And it was a very, very slow uphill, shall we say. Very slow uphill to get to where we are, like, you know. But we had no feeling of hatred or we was all happy and joyful we were, all of us. I don't think anybody, we used to call the Germans names, like, you know, obviously. Especially when he come over there, dropping his bomb on us. I'll tell you what we did one time out there. We was aboard a ship full of ammunition. And the Stukas, that's what I was thinking of. The Stukas used to come up. You only had one bomb. They used to come over, pinpoint you, and drop the bomb, like, you know. And we was aboard this ship. And the order would go, so we'd all climb up the ladder, go and shelter underneath But anyway, go and shelter on the deck somewhere along there, so that if it hit it, don't think anything would have happened. But if it had hit the ship, did balloon it to bits because it was full of ammunition. But we had that down there, we was down there, and about four times he come over, dropping his bombs, and he missed us every time. What a stupid thing, I said, okay. Fancy sending a stupid airman over like that, four times and he missed a bleating great big ship full of mount ammunition.
That bloke say, well, I'm staying here, I'm not going up.
Yeah, he said there was half a dozen of us down the ship. So we'd been up there three times because of the Utica going. So he said, he swore, Sunday, he said, I'm not going up those bloody stairs again. So we all stayed down because we knew what would happen. If he hit the ship, nobody would have survived, full of ammunition. Because once that had gone off, all the ammunition would have gone off. Like, you know. Yeah, so that's how we got. We got to the point where we was what we used to call anekivik, which is an Egyptian word for don't care. We're anekivik. So, yeah. And that's what happened. We used to use that word, which was like anekivik. Remember that word.
No, I will remember it. And what do you think, in what ways do you think the community around here has changed since then, since before the war?
Oh, well, today,
you had neighbours.
There's no neighbours here today.
No neighbours.
No neighbours, no. Mm. We haven't got any neighbours.
Oh, strange.
And why do you think the war caused that to happen? Or why do you think that happened as a result?
Well, because they were all moved away, weren't they? All the neighbours, that we had no neighbours, all our neighbours that we knew, all the people that we knew, we moved away to different places. And so that when they started building these houses, people wanted to be in their house. They didn't want anybody come knocking at the door. Flo, my man's name was. Flo, what is it, Mabel? Can you come and give us a hand indoors? So that, yeah, sure. And Flo would go, or Mum would go and knock on their door. Mm. That's what the neighbours were. Mm. They were there to help each other. Mm. But there's nothing like that today. You live next door to a person, you don't even know their name. Now, I know where my David lives. He lives at Stanford Lee Oak. He's got a house at Stanford Lee Oak. I think he only knows the name of the person who lives next door to him. I don't think he knows anybody else's name. What they've done, they've put they've cushioned themselves in their own houses, and they don't want to be interfered by other people. So you've got no neighbours.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think people do that now?
Because they want to keep what they want. We had nothing. When we was young, we had nothing. We was all poor. None of us had any money. We only had enough money to what we... Because there was no... When I was at work, I was bringing home shirt buttons. And so therefore, if you need any help, you know, Mrs. Kelly next door, or Mrs. And they would come and help you, or you would help them. If anything to do out in the garden, you get one of the men to come in and give you a hand. And that's what it was. That was the neighbours that you had. But today there's no such thing of going to help the lady next door, not today.
I think like fetching all these different nationalities in, that's all I did. You'd have them living next door to you. But I will say, we moved from Cherry Garden Street down there to here. But we had some lovely coloured black neighbours, didn't we?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I even said, I wished every neighbour was like you.
Well, we're still of that. We've still got that in our veins to be neighbours to everybody. If the neighbour wanted anybody, we'd be down to the police.
The bus, and it's full up. It's always black people who give us a seat. I will say that.
More black people get up to give us a seat than white people.
Yeah. But we've never been against them, but that's what caused it. Some people won't talk to them. But we had a few up there, and
Yeah. They're the same as you and me.
The
skin colour's different.
Could you keep
very good people.
And they'd come in our house and I'd mind them. And there's one girl, she's a school teacher there, and her name went down, her name fetched her up. Her mother lives at Catford. And she said, she's playing with the kids underneath, and her name went down Tesco's. It was like on the night time. And she said, Now, the woman who the kid she was playing with knew that her name had gone down Tesco. Of course, she's left out on the landing. And she, I stood there and I thought, well, I think I'll knock her in and help her. The more says, what's here? Yeah. She thought, says, and Nanny's gone down Tesco's. Can I come in? I said, yeah, come in. I said, write a note, Ivana, and put it on your nanny's door. You're in here. And she said, and she told us that I thought, I stood there and I thought, oh, Anna and Elf's the most sensible ones up here. They'll let me in.
But I was, excuse me, who said it?
I've had them all in.
Neighbours looked after us, the children, next door. The Moeans, the neighbour would come in. They'd call out to you, get down over there, Elfie, get down. When I see your mother, I'll tell your mother. Oh, no. Because they're going to tell mother me not get a clap when I get indoors.
The
yeah, they used to take care of us.
If you can't get up here, sinkhole, do it down there. And he started calling it, Elf, I've done a wee down the sinkhole.
Oh, yeah.
He used to call her.
Yeah. He wants to do a wee. Oh, I want to do a wee.
And he's at the third
floor. So, yeah. So the sinkhole in the minute, I said, well, don't do it, I come upstairs and do it along the stairs, do it down that little hole down there. So he said, oh, all right, so he took his willy out of the way. He said, I'm doing it. So I said, yeah, I can see you're doing it. Only about that big, it was a little fella.
Do you ever think, Alfie, about what your life would be like if the war hadn't happened? Or do you ever look back on that time?
I don't know. Because when I left school, I must have had a dozen different jobs. Mm. I used to go from one job to another. You could do that.
Yeah.
I had a dozen different jobs. However, that. I went in for the wireless.
You could walk in and out of jobs. You know,
yeah. Oh, yeah. Easy. Walk down. I don't know. Isn't it? Walk out and go get a job somewhere else.
But.
Yeah, we had I think we had a good life, really, Anne. Apart from the war.
Poor life we had.
Poor, but we had a good life. Mm. We were poor when we got married.
Thank God I ain't got to go work
anymore. No.
I've done more work than I ever done.
Well, that's what you married a woman for, to go and look after you.
Alfie, can I ask, to your mind, is there anything that you wanted to do in your life that the war stopped you doing?
I don't think so.
No.
I don't think so, no. I never had a lot of ambition. Mm-hmm. The only thing I was looking forward to is when I was 21, Dad would get me into the docks, which was a permanent job. So within those years of leaving at 14 until I was 21, I was floating about from job to job. I wasn't looking for any apprenticeship. All I was looking for was when I'm 21, I'd be all right going to the docks with my dad, which wasn't a good thing. I found out in the end, it wasn't a very good thing. Because although you worked hard, you had a lot of days off not working. Still, we got by, didn't we, girl? I made that guy out of work.
What did he say?
You got by.
Yeah, we got by. That was life. And it's, in some instances, it was life in the raw, really. You had to do, you had to help yourself, or you had to help somebody else. And there was a better way of living than we have today. Better way of living.
I'm 32 years.
Though there are some good people out there now. I don't think they're of the mind that we were. We help anybody. Decorate anyway, knock on the door.
Decorate people's places. All yeah. Take
for nothing. Could you come in and give us a hand in here? I could do the same to them. And that's the things we used to do, go and help each other. because you couldn't afford to have a man in to do it, or a workman to do it, so you had to do it yourself. And if you couldn't do it yourself, you'd ask the neighbour to come and give you a hand.
And I couldn't afford to get in debt. I couldn't have nothing on my purchase.
No. One thing we were strict.
To pay for
that's one thing Anne and I were strict about. We must never, ever get in debt. So we lived on what we earned, and that was it.
And we had to save up for what we wanted.
Yeah. When we had, my David, we won him a suit for Christmas. He hadn't had a suit before. He was only a little toddler. And we used to go to the Tadbridge Road, what's the name of them? And
Castos.
A place called Castos. And we'd go in, probably in August, to buy him a suit for Christmas. And what we used to have to do, if the suit was, say, £4, we'd pay so much a week or so much a month, so up to Christmas. So instead of putting the £4 down, we would give him a shilling or two by whatever we can afford. And by Christmas come, you'd have paid for the suit. Go and get the suit, and now you got your suit. So you had to work it out that way. Otherwise, if you didn't, you'd be in debt all the time. And we never borrowed money, did we? Never borrowed money from people.
Great. Thanks so much, Alfie. We'll probably end the interview there.
Mm.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Really.
You're welcome.